morning, everyone. It's kind of a, again, it's a privilege to be able to preach here again this morning, and it's been a privilege over the summer and whatnot to be able to address First Christian in the absence of a full-time pastor. Of course, next week you will have a full-time pastor, and but I wanted to extend my appreciation to you, the church, for receiving me and allowing me to preach, because I enjoy it, and you've been very kind to receive it. I had originally planned an 8-button message, but I'm going to make it a 7 because it's a little bit hot up here. I think a 7-button message is a little bit more, it's better anyway, so you won't be losing anything. If you have your Bibles and want to follow along with the reading of Scripture, we're going to read from Genesis chapter 39. And we're going to begin with verse 11, reading verses 11 through 20. Now, I'm going to read from the New King James Version. No real reason other than I like it. That's the one I keep on my shelf beside my desk mostly, so I study mostly out of that. You have the NIV in your pews. Genesis chapter 39, beginning with verse 11, I'm going to read through verse 20. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house were inside, that she, Potiphar's wife, caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice, and it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. And then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside." So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after this manner," that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. That ends our reading this morning. Well, a couple of weeks ago, when I preached last, I indicated that I wanted to have sort of a two-part message. When I thought of this message originally, I think I was on the schedule for 2 Sundays in a row, so I thought we'll just do Joseph for 2 Sundays, and then schedules changed, and so that got rearranged a little bit, so we had a couple-week interval between Joseph Part 1 and Joseph Part 2. But in the interim, Chase, he snuck a Joseph in there on you, and as Chase and I talked about, and as he explained to you also, that his was sort of a Part 3. So you had Part 1, then you had Part 3, now we're going to go back and finish up with Part 2. If Sam comes next week and says, "We're going to talk about Joseph for a little while," I guess you're in trouble, because you've been Josephed out by now. Actually, it was interesting because even Dan Croft last week alluded to the story of Joseph a little bit in his message. So you've been hammered away at this one. So hopefully you'll know it quite well at the end of this series. Joseph, great story, and a lot to draw from. Matter of fact, we could talk probably for weeks about the story of Joseph, because it's just rich with spiritual insights and truths that we could really, really get into. So even if we talk about it for a while, wouldn't be a problem. But just to recap a little bit, you might remember Joseph. He's the favored son of his father, Jacob. Now, Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children, is what we read in the Scripture. You might remember that Jacob made Joseph that coat of many colors and caught his brother's attention. They became jealous of him because of that, and they started to plot against him. One day out in the fields, they saw Joseph coming in his coat, and they were ready to kill him. They were going to kill Joseph and just do away with him. They were so jealous of him. But instead, Reuben, the oldest brother, said, let's not kill him. And so they devised a plan. They lowered him to a pit. Sure enough, along come the Ishmaelites, and they decided to sell Joseph. So they pull him out of the pit, and they sell Joseph to the Ishmaelites. And problem solved. He's gone. He's done away with. They tell Joseph's father, of course, that he's dead. Now, Joseph makes his way to Egypt. He goes down with the Ishmaelites. He's sold once again to the house of Potiphar, who is the head of the guard for Pharaoh, sort of like the Pharaoh's secret service, okay? Potiphar is the head of that. He's in charge of the guard at the palace for Pharaoh. He buys Joseph. Joseph is one of his slaves, and pretty soon Joseph works himself into a position of authority. He's a slave, and yet everyone sees that he's got something special about him. So eventually, Joseph is second in command in the house. He has charge of everything. He has freedom for everything except Potiphar's wife, which incidentally gets him in trouble. Now you remember, Potiphar's wife has her eye on Joseph. And on a few occasions, she's tried to seduce this young man, but he's refused her. We talked about that when I was here last. He refused her. He kept refusing her. He said, this is a sin against God. Until finally one day, she's orchestrated it, maybe, where no one else is in the house, just Joseph and her. She gets him cornered, and she says to him, come on, Joseph. Joseph refuses. Now this time, he's got no other out but to run. And so he does just that. He runs. And that's where we left it off the last time. He runs. He avoids temptation. In fact, we talked about some of the excuses that we use to explain why we give in to temptation. Joseph didn't use any of those. He ran. He went running, but he left his coat in her hand. She grabbed at him, and there she's left standing there with his coat. Joseph's coats has a way of getting him into trouble, it seems. Now, she's angry now. Potiphar's wife is probably not the kind of woman who is shunned. She probably is not the kind of woman who hears the word no a lot. You probably know that kind. And so she's angry now. Joseph has refused her, and so she's angry. But, you know, she can't really go to her husband and say, hey, I tried to sleep with your slave, and he wouldn't do it. You know, I mean, she can't complain like that. And so she has to devise a story about Joseph. She wants him punished for saying no. The only way to do it is to lie about it. So she does just that. When Potiphar comes home, she says, look, I've got Joseph, your slave's coat. He tried to attack me. He tried to attack me when I screamed. He took off running, and I still have his coat. I mean, how else can I explain the fact that I have Joseph's coat? Now, if there was a trial or a hearing or even a questioning, we're not told. All we know is that Joseph went to prison. Joseph was thrown in prison. Did he have a chance to explain himself? Did he have a chance to say, well, that's not correct, or I have another version of the story? We don't know. My guess is probably not. He's a slave. Whose word are you going to believe? The word of a servant, a slave, or the word of Potiphar, head of security at the palace, his wife? She makes the accusation, and he ends up in prison. Think about Joseph's life just for a moment. He's been betrayed by his brothers, sold as a slave, lied to, and now he ends up in prison. Prison in another country. He's in Egypt, not the country of his father's house. His father, who loves him, who would probably try to secure a rescue for him if he could, doesn't even know he's alive. And Potiphar's wife, who knows that he's there unjustly, isn't saying a word. So Joseph is locked up in prison. And there's no real hope of a rescue. There's no real sense that he's going to be released. Matter of fact, he's in the Pharaoh's prison. That doesn't mean like the Pharaoh's hotel. It's where the enemies of the king go, the worst kind of enemies. Probably not your run-of-the-mill prison. Probably not your typical thief goes in there, but anyone who has troubled the king has gone to the Pharaoh's prison. Not likely a comfortable place. Not likely a fun place. And there he is in prison. In prison. I want to talk about that prison experience just for a little bit today. Because Joseph's story is really not altogether unique. I want to talk a little bit about suffering today. Because that's what Joseph did. But the kind of suffering that Joseph suffered is not your typical kind of suffering. It's a peculiar type of suffering. It's not as Peter would write about. He said, I don't want you suffering as a murderer or an evildoer or as a busybody or someone getting in someone else's business. Don't suffer like that. In other words, don't suffer as an evil person. That's not the kind of suffering that the Bible encourages. And a lot of us make mistakes. We make bad choices. We do things that are wrong, and then we suffer because of that. We've all made bad choices. We've all made mistakes. We've all committed sins. And when we do that, sometimes we suffer the consequences of those sins. Peter says, I don't want you suffering for that reason. So that's not the kind of suffering that I want to talk about. I want to talk about the kind of suffering that Joseph suffered. He was there unjustly. He was there not because he asked to be there. He was there really for no other reason than some people put him there. And he suffered because of that. Now, I have a feeling, I have a sense that Joseph's story resonates with a lot of people here. At some point or another in your life, you've suffered like Joseph. It wasn't your choice. You didn't pick this. You didn't pick this place. That is life in an Egyptian prison. When you yourself don't select it, when you had no say over it, that's life in an Egyptian prison. When someone else makes the mistakes and you suffer, that's life in an Egyptian prison. Maybe it was your parents and their stupidity puts you in your place where you are today. They made all the bad choices and now you suffer. That's life in an Egyptian prison. Maybe it was your siblings, just like Joseph's siblings. They made bad choices for him and now he's paying the price for what they have done. That's life in an Egyptian prison. Maybe you've been betrayed by, not family, but maybe by friends or people that you should have trusted. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't say anything wrong. You were just being completely innocent. And you're suffering because of what they've done. That's life in an Egyptian prison. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's not that kind of suffering. Maybe it's the kind of suffering that you physically suffer. You didn't ask for this sickness. You didn't ask to have this disease. You didn't ask for this malady to hit you. You didn't request any of this. People your age are out running around doing this and that, and you are stuck in your body, and you didn't ask for it. That's life in an Egyptian prison. When you didn't make the choice, and yet it was handed to you. And now you have to deal with it. Maybe you've had an accident, and it brought about all kind of problems and issues, and it was just an accident, and you didn't ask for it. Sound familiar? That's life in an Egyptian prison. When, like Joseph, who didn't ask for it. Matter of fact, Joseph was there because he was righteous. I mean, he could have slept with Potiphar's wife and he wouldn't be where he was. And yet he chose to do the right thing. Isn't that awful? When you even choose to do what's right, when you insist on doing what is right, when you make the right choices and you still end up in this kind of place. Have you experienced that? Have you felt that from time to time? Or there's another kind of suffering that we consider sometimes. Do I dare say it? Do I dare say what I know has at least once in a while filtered through some of your minds? Do I dare give voice to what I know has echoed once in a while into our hearts? When you've thought, hey, maybe it's God who put me here. Where was God when all of this happened? Surely God couldn't have stopped this, should he? He's omnipotent, meaning he has all power. He's omniscient. He saw it coming. He could have stopped this. He could have stayed the hand of disaster. He could have kept back the arm of injustice. He could have stopped this from happening to me. Where was God? I was trying to serve him. I was trying to do what's right. Where was God? Where was God? Why didn't he stop this? Doesn't he love me? What, does he think I'm some sort of punching bag that I can take all of this punishment and still keep my head up? Who does he think that I am? He's picked the wrong person. I can't take this. I can't endure this. Maybe God is to blame for where I am. Surely he could have stopped it. Surely he could have reached down and kept evil men and evil women from me. Surely God could have built a hedge around me and kept me from all of this. Maybe God's to blame. I suppose Joseph could have thought that. He was in prison, and we really have no insight into what he was thinking and what was going on in his mind. The only thing we do know in Genesis 39, in verse 21, we read that the Lord was with Joseph. He was with him. How he was with him isn't exactly clear. In what way God manifested himself to Joseph, we don't really know. Maybe Joseph never even felt it. Maybe he never even experienced it. Maybe he never even really knew fully how God was with him. We only know that the Lord was with Joseph in prison. The Lord was with Joseph in the Egyptian prison. And I believe that the Lord is also with us. The answer to some of our wonderings is, yes, I suppose the Lord could have prevented this. He could have stayed the hand of disaster. He could have kept back this accident. He could have kept wicked people from us. But it looks like he chose to allow it. It looks like God allowed me to sit in this Egyptian prison. And so we ask, why? Why? What's the point? Well, I'm going to suggest to you that I believe really that there are only lessons we will ever learn in an Egyptian prison. There are only sides of God that we will only ever see from behind those bars. I believe the only glimpse, this kind of glimpse of God you will ever experience is in this particular kind of moment. Job said, Job 23, he said, "The Lord has tested me, and when I pass this test, I'll come through like gold." There's a purifying process. There's a burning away of all the dross. And it only happens in this particular moment. It only happens in this particular prison. The bad things that God doesn't want attached to me get burned off. And that's why God allowed it for Job. Because he said, when I come through, I'm going to be like gold. Wager to guess that some of you probably are in that Egyptian prison this morning. If not, maybe you're preparing your hearts to go to one. Maybe it's in your near future. Maybe you are in the midst of it. And you wonder, why? Why? Why is this occurring? And I believe, just as Job said, it's in that moment that God is doing something, and that he has chosen to do that something in that moment, in that prison, in that place that you find yourself. God is trying to show you something of himself that you will only see from there. I believe the Apostle Paul agrees with this as he wrote to the church in Corinth. He said, don't lose heart. Oh, therefore, don't lose heart. You who are in that place right now, you who are wondering why this is happening, wondering if I can even make it through this prison experience, Paul was saying, don't lose heart. Though the outward man is perishing, the inward man is being renewed day by day, there's something going on inside of you. God is doing a work with you. And that this difficulty, he describes it as a light, momentary affliction. It's nothing. It's just passing when you compare to all of eternity. It's just a light affliction. But it's doing something in you. It's bringing out a glory that outweighs anything else you'll ever see. And he says, therefore, don't lose heart. Hang in there. It'll be okay. God is doing something. Now, I can't stand up here and tell you that your release from the prison is imminent, that very soon you'll get out of this situation, that all will be restored and made well like in Joseph's case. I can't make that kind of promise. The fact is that some Christians will even die suffering. But it's for a purpose. God is trying to show you something about himself. And we need to just for a moment close out that prison walls and bars in our minds and focus on him who's doing a work in you. He's fashioning you. He's hammering out something that's pure and beautiful and lasting and wonderful. And he's burning away all the things that won't matter in this world, won't matter in this life, and it can only happen here. Don't miss a good suffering. Don't miss it, because it's there that God is doing something with you and for you. This morning, as we close, we're going to sing that favorite hymn of many people, It Is Well. And I'm sure you know this story, Horatio Spafford, a man who hit rock bottom in Chicago. His business burned, his house burned, his wife was ill, and so he put his wife and children on a boat and sent them overseas. He was going to catch up with them in a little bit. He just needed to put some things in order, and then he gets the news that's almost unbearable. The ship has gone down, taking his wife and his children with him. So he gets on a boat, and he sails to the very spot where the wreck had occurred. And there, looking at the waves lapping the side of his boat and looking at the watery graves of his children, he pens the words to this song, It Is Well. It's well. It's well. No matter what strikes me, no matter what happens, it's well. Because God is doing something. And this morning as we sing this, if you sense that you need prayer, a moment with God, maybe just an ear to hear out, and I'll invite you to come down as we sing this song.